We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is Ryan Archidiak, and I shout out to the Bulls HQ podcast, all the way from Australia. We represent, and thanks for all the support.
Fans, welcome to Bulls HQ, a Chicago Bulls podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the show, and thank you for your patience whilst I was away for a couple of weeks there. Let me just say that after you get your tonsils taken out, whilst the copious amounts of ice cream you are basically just living in is quite good. The soreness at the back of your head isn't ideal, which makes speaking very difficult, which makes podcasting very difficult, hence the lack of shows over the last couple of weeks. But we are back now, hopefully to a routine schedule, at least for a week or two, maybe, until my first child is born, which is happening in a few weeks' time, which I'm sure will send my entire life into a tailspin, and I don't know what my recording schedule will be like post that, but we'll wait and see. So whilst it has been a hectic time for me over the last few weeks, and whilst it most likely will definitely be a hectic time for me over the coming weeks, ironically, the same can be said about our Chicago Bulls, as we just saw in the most recent game against the Miami Heat. I mean, look at that first half. Couldn't have been any worse. And then somehow, some way, they found a way to come back and played a fantastic second half to the point where they almost stole that game against the Heat. That's how the Bulls played as a team. But I thought Coby White, he kind of was emblematic of that. Like, he struggled in that first half. But without him in the second half, the Bulls had no chance of even getting back into that game against the Heat. So on the show today, I really wanted to talk about Coby because in a lot of ways, he's one of the few interesting storylines that remain for this team in what is shaping up to be, unfortunately, another wasteful season, one with, you know, just too many missed opportunities. So Coby's a player that everyone in the fan base has an opinion on, one I certainly have an opinion on. Whether you love or hate his game, his performance against the Heat really represented the pros and cons of all arguments from both sides. So I thought it'd be interesting to have an expanded conversation on Coby White rather than just talking about the same old things related to our Chicago Bulls. And who better to have a conversation on all things Coby than someone who probably knows the Bulls guard better than anyone else on this planet? So let's welcome in Will White, brother of Coby White, onto Bulls HQ. Will, how are you, mate?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm well, mate. I'm doing good. I thought, at the half of this game where the Bulls were down 20 points, that's my Sunday afternoon, I'm recording this at that time. I thought, you know, it would be a tough way for me to end my weekend, but then they came back and made a game of it in that second half and played pretty damn well. And a lot of that was driven by your brother, Coby, who had a fantastic second half after really struggling in that first half. So maybe we can start there, mate. What did you see from that game, the Bulls game, more generally? And then we can hone in on Coby and what you saw from him today.
So first thing I noticed was my Miami Heat switch 1-5.
Yeah.
And the teams that the Bulls go against a switch, play a switching man-to-man defense. They struggle with that. We can go back as early as the Houston Rockets preseason game, the first game that they played at home, where they struggled, where Houston was switching 1-5, and then San Antonio did it to them when they played at San Antonio. They struggled with the switching, and then tonight in the first half, they struggled with that, and I think that attributed to the struggles on offense. Defensively wise, they just struggled containing Duncan Robinson early. He had four threes in the first quarter.
Yeah, something like that. It felt like 20 million, but it may have only been four. But
yeah. And then I think that they made it. I think that they made adjustments in the second half to where they would try to get the ball in the post, and then they would bring that other post player up to the elbow, ball side elbow, so they could get a high low, which helped create a better entry pass without as many defenders in the paint when the guards were trying to enter the ball in the post. And mm-hmm. then they actually played some really good defensive possessions from start to finish. And I think in the second half, offensively, they had some empty possessions. And I think that's what ultimately lost them the game.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right about the defense sort of picking up in that second half, and that sort of enabled them to get into a bit more transition offense and not necessarily get burdened down in that half court where the Heat could sort of switch everything and really take the Bulls to task like they did in that first half. So the fact that they turned it up on defense sort of fueled their offense, and you know, lo and behold, guys like Kobe, Denzel, a few others sort of stepped up and started getting the offense humming along. And yeah, it's interesting how they can pull that out like for one half and then, you know, go missing, you know, for one half as well. What do you put that down to? Like, is that just is that the preparedness of the team? Is that just the Heat just being on one in that first half and maybe, you know, easing up in the second half? Like, from your standpoint, like, how do you view that, I guess?
I think it's a mixture of both, honestly. The Bulls have been up and down all year, right?
Yeah.
So they play good and they, you know, they come out good and they play good, and then they have stretches where they don't look good. They look terrible almost, in my opinion. The Heat also lost the night before to the Hawks. So that, you know, them as an organization, as a team with Jimmy Butler as their leader, you know, he wasn't going to let them come out flat. And then I think the Bulls kind of got back to their DNA, which was the last five games, of them guarding these last five games in a sense, especially when they guarded, you know, the Cavs the first game and the Hornets this past game. And I think you kind of saw a balance out. Also, mm-hmm. the Heat have been struggling. They're kind of like Jekyll and Hyde this year in terms of their play. So, and you kind of saw that with them as well, when they had some high moments. And then in the second half, they had some really low moments, specifically the 8-second violation that they had.
Yeah. That's a perfect example. I mean, that wasn't very Heat-esque, and particularly like you compare with how they were playing in that first half. And yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, like there was a tale of two halves for both teams. And yeah, it was an interesting game. I won't harp on too much about that Denzel Valentine 3. I'm a lot of Bulls fans at the moment are not very happy about it, but I guess it's, you know, if we want to take the optimist view, the fact that they were able to get in back in the game and where we can actually get disappointed about a look like that being thrown up there, then I guess that's more positive than getting blown out, let's say. At least that's the optimistic view I'm trying to spin on this particular game. But look, I don't necessarily want to talk about the team more generally, because that's what I do on here every other time. And, you know, I'd rather focus in on Kobe because, you know, to be fair, like I said at the top, like, I've had enough about talking about the same things over and over. Kobe is one of the more interesting players on this team. He's one of the more interesting storylines on this team. And given that you were on the show, like, it just makes sense, obviously, to hone into Kobe and just doing a bit of a deeper dive on his career to this point, I guess, in Chicago, given that we're approaching almost the end of his sophomore season. But I guess you and I, you know, at least for clarity for the listeners here, or context for the listeners, you and I have sort of been going back and forth or exchanging thoughts on Twitter, at least via DMs and those sorts of things. We agree on some things, we disagree on some things. Obviously, I'm more than happy to table all of those things today. But Yeah, I'm just interested to hear from your perspective, because I guess I am a critic of Kobe at times. He most definitely does things well on the court. He most definitely brings something to this team that so few can. But at the same time, you know, I am quick to bring up the flaws, let's say, or to point those out. And maybe I'm a little bit unfair in that sense. So I'm most certainly happy to hear hear a balanced view of it, let's say. So, I want to dive in deeply on Kobe, and we can talk about Kobe as a basketball player more generally. But I think before we even get there, given your relationship with Kobe, maybe you can just sort of give us an idea of who Kobe is as a person. Like, let my listeners know, let Bulls fans know more generally, like who is Kobe, I guess? Because, we can talk about Kobe, the basketball, all day, but like, tell us a little bit about the guy, the man, as a brother, as a son, those sorts of things. Like, who is this guy?
Kobe is a introvert by nature.
Okay.
He was an introvert really until he went to UNC, University of North Carolina. And that kind of helped him come out of his shell. Hardworking, mm-hmm. family person, extremely hard worker. That kind of just runs in our family. Like I said, a family person. Just a good, like, once you get to know him, he's really goofy. A goofy kid. He's a kid, like, just a kid, goofy kid, likes to play and have fun. Once you get to know him, always has a smile on his face, and he's a very, very loyal person.
Yeah. No, look, I had a sense of that, let's say, from my vantage point, as let's say, like, from a secondary perspective, from a fan point of view, like, you see glimpses of that. Like, I can just go back to the night he was drafting, where he was doing his post-draft, after the Bulls had drafted him. He was doing these interviews, his round of interviews. And at that time when, Cam Johnson got drafted, it's like you saw a glimpse of who Kobe was as a person, let's say, but you've also seen, Kobe as a person based on, the messages that he stands for. Like, a lot of these games, he's sort of walking into arenas with a message branded across his chest type thing. He clearly sounds like a kid that sort of stands for the right things. But I guess from a fan point of view, like, we often just think about these guys as an on-court product, what they do from a Chicago Bulls basketball playing point of view. But it's always interesting to I guess, just try to understand who these guys are, I guess, is my point.
Yeah, like, so my perspective on that is everybody's human. So, like, and I think that he's like I told you, he's an introvert. So that's a way of him expressing himself with, you know, the messages and the things that he really cares about. And that was just the idea that my sister and him had. And I think it's been really cool for them. I think, like you said, that also shows the type of person he is. And it shows the things that matter to him without him necessarily going out here and talking about it like some of the older guys in the league, like a Chris Paul or a Donovan Mitchell or even a Garrett Temple.
Yeah, for sure. And look, it clearly stands for the right things, and however he's comfortable expressing that, then that's how he should be comfortable doing so, I suppose. But it is interesting to hear that he's an introvert as a person, because when you think about Kobe as maybe a ball player, let's say, like, his game and his style isn't very introverted at all. Like, I mean, even his look isn't super introverted as well. Like, coming into a rookie, I suppose, with the hair and those sorts of things, the way he played, the way he sort of expresses himself on the basketball court, like, it is kind of interesting to hear that he is an introvert as a person, but then as a basketball player, like, he just seems like this super confident kid that, like, as we saw in his rookie season, just came out and just started shooting, didn't care about, the fact that he was a rookie type thing. He was just going out there and just trying to make baskets, trying to do what he does. So it is interesting that you sort of say that.
Yeah. So I know a lot of guys that have, like, an alter ego on the court and off the court. Yeah, okay. They're two totally different people. One person, and the UNC fans may get mad at me for saying this, one person I believe that is like that is Grayson Allen. Like, okay. I got a chance to meet him in L.A. My brother worked out at D-Waves, the D-Wave Invitational before his rookie year.
Yeah.
He was out there. And off the court, he's like, chill, laid-back, cool dude. And on the court, everybody just remembers him for all the incidents of tripping people. So I think Colin Sexton is also like that as well. Like, I follow basketball, so, like, Colin kind of was known for, like hyping himself up during the games and having this, like, really, really, like, rugged mentality on the court that was just going to come at you. And off the court, he's a family guy. He comes from a great family. I met his people. and like a real, real nice guy. So like, yeah. I think it's quite a few guys out there like that.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. That insight's, you know, I appreciate it. It's good to know that sort of stuff. Because like I said, like from a fan's point of view, like we don't necessarily get to see that human element of these guys. We only see them as basketball players. But, you know, to hear that sort of stuff, it is kind of cool. But obviously, I want to talk about Kobe as a player because that's, you know, that's what I see, let's say. But nonetheless, it is fascinating to get your insight as to Kobe the person. But I also want to get your insight on Kobe as the ball player because you and I maybe see things differently. And I'm sure there's, you know, you've seen every game that Kobe's played. Like, you have seen more of Kobe than I have. I think that's pretty clear. And like I said from the top, whilst I can be critical of Kobe, and I think I'm fair when I am, maybe you disagree on that, but I think I'm being fair. But obviously, we share differing views on things. So let's talk about Kobe, the player, and maybe we can address that. The criticism first, because I mean, from your vantage point, like when someone like me, you know, talks about Kobe's defense or, you know, his playmaking or whatever it may be, like what is it that you see from my criticism or other critics that maybe we are missing that obviously you see? Let's address that first. How do you approach that? Or you know, when I label some criticism on Kobe or put something on him and maybe I'm not saying something that you are, like, how can I go about seeing what it is you see?
So for me, like obviously, like you said, I've watched him play. Yeah. I've also coached and played, and like so now I'm watching the games. I'm watching like more so, I guess, from a coaching lens, and then maybe a fan, and then maybe a brother, if that makes sense.
Okay.
I look at like where he started from last year to where he came this year, in certain aspects to where like. Okay, he does still get hit on screens, white ball screens. Like he got hit on a couple tonight at the beginning.
Yeah,
but then
yeah.
It's also, but then you got to realize, like I feel like the steps that he's made, like he's made. If you go and look, he's made progression and different things. And I think most people are like really stat driven, and I understand the stats to a certain extent, but I'm like an eye test person, so I just look at. Like, okay, you talked about it may be like the screen thing. Like, he's not getting hit with as many screens as he was at the beginning. And, like, I feel like in this little five-game stretch, even before that, when he came off the bench, I thought his defense had been much better than it was the first 10, 15 games of the season. So I look at things like that. I think most people look at stuff that's in the moment, like that particular game. Or that, or a particular play that stands out. And I just look at overall progression, because he's came a long, long way on defense, in my opinion. And I think that, it's not like he doesn't want to guard. It'd be different if he was just like a turd or a dud on defense that just couldn't defend, like didn't want to defend. You got guys like that just want to play offense and they don't care about defending. I don't think that's the case. And I think he's just learning, like, and because the defense was totally different at Carolina, the system.
Yeah, for sure. And the defense is different this year for the Bulls than it was last season.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, as a young player, I think he's just learning. So, I look at it from that point of view. And then if we talked about the turnovers, tonight was rough in the first half. Like, I'll be the first to admit, he had four turnovers in the first half. And then he had two in the game, two the rest of the way. It's no way around it. You can't sugarcoat, you know, the turnovers. I would say that was the first time I think that he saw a team blitz him off a ball screen like that. And I think they're the only team that did that this year. I think that caught him by surprise, but that's not an excuse. Like, I mean, he'll get better from it. He'll know how to handle it now going forward. And I also think, this, like I said, the switching defense has messed him up. And I think that kind of threw him off. But it'd be different. Some of his ball handling, like at the beginning of the year, it was like him coming off the screen and him losing the ball in traffic, which means you should tighten up your handle. And I think he's worked on that. Now it's just like making stronger passes and everybody wants to get on him about like missing reads. Like, as a player, you're gonna miss reads. Like, he's like a 21-year-old person, and you running plays, and you got to get Vooch. You know what I'm saying? You just got to get a whole bunch of people involved. And like you said, everybody's human. and you're gonna mess up. Like, it's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like, I just feel like sometimes fans want these guys to go out here and play perfect games, and then if they don't play a perfect game, the whole world sees it. Not just my brother, but everybody in general. The whole world sees it. And yeah. Most of us have a job, and if we mess up in our job, our everyday job, the only person that knows about it is us or our boss or a coworker, not the whole world. And I think that sometimes we don't, as fans, like, I'm guilty of it, and watching other people play and, like, being critical of other people, we don't see it that way.
Yeah, for sure. I completely agree. And, like, in a rational moment, like, we are, like you've caught me now, let's say, the post-game, when I've allowed this game to digest, I'm not necessarily thinking too much about this game anymore. Like, I 100% completely agree with everything you just said in terms of just, you know, more generally how we think about players, how we think about basketball and those sorts of things. It's just, I guess, interesting from my point of view, like, being a more of a fan of the team, let's say, and just thinking about things more through the prism of the Bulls, less so an individual player. I guess that's where there is that divergence between someone like yourself, let's say, and then someone like me. But I certainly take your point that, you know, like someone like me, for example, I see a bad position where, you know, Kobe dies on a screen, let's say, gets hit on a screen. And then there was a play today against the Heat where really good coaching by Sepulveda. He knows the Bulls are dropping in defense, at least with the center. He's having Bam play out high, setting big, tasty screens, and it's kind of leaving someone like Kobe on an island, like, particularly when you're running, like, pin downs and, you know, screen action for someone like Duncan Robinson, and then, you know, someone like Kobe gets hit on the screen, there's no one there to help, in goes that Robinson three that we're talking about before. Like, that's tough, and maybe I, as a fan, maybe harp on that point too much, so I certainly take your point on that, and I guess I certainly take your point as well on the fact that someone like Kobe, like, I never question his intent or his ability to work hard or anything like that. And I think you do make a fair point in the sense that he isn't someone out there that's just trying to play one side of the basketball court. He isn't someone that doesn't necessarily isn't aware of his, you know, his limitations, let's say. He seems and comes across as someone that, you know, wants to work on that stuff. So I think that, if anyone's putting that on him, then that would be an incorrect take, I think, from my point of view. But I certainly take your point. But I guess, like, where I'm coming from and maybe the things I'm thinking about, someone like Kobe, I guess it's just more holistically, like, how does he fit onto the Bulls and how does his play style fit on the Bulls and all that sort of thing. So that's how I look at it. That's how I sort of analyze the situation. And maybe, you know, fans like myself are quick to critique someone like Kobe because, you know, before Kobe came, like, we've been through years and years of sort of rough Bulls basketball, and maybe we are just not so patient anymore, and we just want to see things sped up to a degree. So I guess, like, from Kobe's standpoint, like, do you think long-term someone like Kobe, who needs that development, who needs that opportunity to sort of learn from his mistakes and learn from experiences on the court, sort of makes sense on a team like the Bulls, where it kind of feels like this team is trying to win now, particularly after trading for Vucevic time type of thing? Like, do you think they can develop and win at the same time? Is that something that's possible? And in particular, something that's possible with someone like Kobe?
That's, I would say, yeah, no, right? Just being upfront and honest, I think that it really just depends on the mindset. Like, I'm not, obviously I talked to my brother, but I'm not in the end with the,
yeah, yeah,
with the, you know, the front office. I think we've seen development with him already this year, as far as, like, all right, he came out and he had some good games at the beginning of the year. Like, people forget about the 16-10 against the Wizards at the beginning of the year when they won. People forget about the 13 assists they lost against the Clippers. He didn't shoot the ball particularly well, but he had 13 assists. People forget about the 26-10 against, like, I want to say the Blazers. The Blazers.
Yeah.
You know, they forget about stuff like that. And then, you know, he gets put to the bench and he has up and down games. And now, like, he's back in the starting lineup and they're 3-3. We're at 500 without Zach. And I think that's where I'm going with this is that's development, right? Like, he obviously is highs and lows, but, you know, I feel like he was ready for the moment. And if you can't be ready for the moment if you're not doing what you're supposed to do off the court when nobody's looking, whether it be watching film or whether it be in the gym working on the stuff that you need to work on. So when your number's called, you can go out there and you can step in and you can be ready to produce. I think that with the, my opinion, with the, a full off season, actually a full off season where you can actually get in the gym and you not, now you know what the front office and Billy want from you, what you want, what they want you to work on. You get a full training camp with them. I think that it'll be better for my brother's development going forward. I think that he's a quick learner. He's had two totally different roles from this year to last year. And if anybody would have said that, you know, he would have been starting right now and just had 31 points against the Heat or, you know, whatever the case may be, like, I don't know if, you know, I would have said, yeah, I agree with you. This is where he would have been at with the, just the different things that have happened from year one to year two. But I think that, you know, I think that he can get there, and I think that he can. It just depends on, like, what the Bulls want to do. I think he is somebody that could be long-term because you don't necessarily have to run a play for him. He doesn't have to have the ball in his hands to still score and be effective on the offensive end. And I think that he's going to get better and better at getting the ball where he needs to be as a point guard or a lead guard. And I think he's going to continue to develop on the defensive end. So and one thing about him, he's going to work. He's going to put in the time and the work and the effort, and he actually cares about winning, like just the team winning and having success.
No, for sure. And look, I wanted to talk about that role, like what is Kobe's rest role, how it all fits and all that sort of stuff. Because, I mean, to answer my own question that I sort of posed to you there, like I think there is a role for Kobe on this specific team, let's say, but maybe it's not the best role for him long term. And I guess what I'm getting at is, like, to me, in my eyes, like I see Kobe as that perfect option as someone that you can sort of bring off the bench, probably more so as a two guard, but just a general creator off the bench who can come in and torch teams and go off like he sort of did in that second half. And when he's kind of more off ball, catching and shooting, doing those sorts of things, and he's less reliant, or the team is less reliant on him being the lead creator, let's say, then I think he can have a really serviceable role for this team, but like just more generally for any team. Like he'll have a long career doing that in the NBA, I guess is my point. Like if he can be the Jordan Clarkson of the Bulls, let's say, like there's clearly a role for him here in Chicago, but there's, you know, even that role more generally, like clearly that's a valuable role. So I guess we don't know what Kobe's career will be, but based on what we've sort of seen this season where the Bulls have tried to make him or mold him more into that lead creator, point guard type guy versus maybe last season where he was sort of more off ball, maybe coming off the bench as more of a microwave scorer type, like what do you see or what do you think is the more instinctive, natural role or preferable role for someone like Kobe going forward?
If you look at the NBA right now, it's a lot of people, and you can pass, dribble, and shoot. I think that obviously, like, it's Rose is Rose, but I think he could, like, my personal opinion, I think he could be a starter, because, like, no disrespect to Jordan Clarkson, I feel like that my brother is more of a willing passer than he is or was, yeah, even when he was starting with the Lakers.
Definitely with the Lakers, for sure. Yeah, that guy chucked on the Lakers.
Yeah, so I'll compare him more to like a Jamal Murray in a sense, especially with the way the offense is ran through the post right now. I think he can do that. Now whether it's seen to be done is a different story, and whether the Bulls front office thinks that's another story too. But I think that he's been doubted his whole life, right? In my opinion,
yeah.
If you know the story, like, nobody thought he was going to be one and done. My brother was, like, a fringe top 25 player. He committed to Carolina early, bust on the scene. So, like, he's always proven people wrong, you know. And I think that he's going to continue to do that. It's people forget that, like he said the other night, people want instant gratification. You like, obviously, it's a small body of work. And people develop at certain rates and at different times. People forget that Kyle Lowry was almost out of the league before he went to Memphis. He was at Houston, then he got traded to Memphis. And then he got traded to Toronto, and then he revived his career. People also forget that, like, people like Tobias Harris couldn't even get off the bench in Milwaukee. And he went and was able to play in Orlando and got better. Then he went to the Clippers, and that's when he kind of ascended. So I just think that my motto is like, if you put in the work, then things are going to come. And like, if you don't have to be like a savant with the ball, especially in the offense that they run, right? Mm-hmm. This is what they're going to do going forward. You don't have to be a savant with the ball. Like tonight, Kendrick Nunn is technically the point guard on their team, but he only had 2 assists. I think Jimmy Butler and Bam led them in assists. So like, it just depends on the personnel around. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. If they continue to like, which it seems that they want to play through the post, or like how they did in Denver, I think that he is capable of being a starter on this team, because now somebody like him makes it easier for Vooch to get shots.
I certainly understand that. Like, I understand that point of view. I guess where I'm coming from is like, can you start Kobe, LaVine, and Vooch from a defensive standpoint, like right now at least, let's say? Like, maybe that looks different in a couple more years when Kobe grows into his body and those sorts of things, and he gets better on that end.
Oh yeah, for sure. By the numbers, right? By the numbers, and obviously sometimes the eye test, that's a rough 3-man lineup to play on defense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you did that, then I think you have to do something like Portland did, where they go, where your 3 and your 4 are just like 3-and-D guys in a sense, or like guys that can defend, like a Torrey Craig or a Mo Harkins, mm-hmm. or somebody like that.
Yeah, and that's definitely true. And look, I take your point that it definitely is about personnel. And I guess, again, coming back to what I sort of said earlier, like, I look at this from a Bulls prism, and that's pretty much the only way I look at it. And if I do extend it to a specific player view, like, I look at it through the lenses of Zach LaVine, who's the all-star on the team. Like, he's the best player on the team. Let's do what makes best sense for someone like Zach. So, like, that's how I look at things. But I certainly take your point and agree with you. Like, depending on the personnel, then, yeah, Kobe can be a starter in this league. Like, if he... I guess the issue with the Bulls is that they don't necessarily have that number one lead creator type thing. They don't have a Jokic, they don't have a Doncic or someone like that, or a LeBron, where, you know, if Kobe was playing next to those sorts of guys, then most definitely someone like Kobe could be a starter in this league. But for this specific Bulls team, I guess, is where I just... I ebb and flow on it, I guess, is my point.
I mean, yeah, like we all have a different opinions, right? But
yeah.
If you coming down and they run the zipper action to get Vooch the ball on the post,
yeah.
I think it's more so of, we talk about lead creator and being able to get people shots. Yeah, that's it. But if you analyze and look at the way they've been playing, even when Vooch was here, you're coming down and you're throwing the ball on the post and you're playing out of that. Necessarily don't need somebody that's a savant with the ball like a Luka or a LeBron.
That's
my point, right? That's my point.
Yeah.
Even the way that they were trying to play with Wendell, like, you didn't necessarily need somebody that was a savant. You needed somebody that what he struggled with earlier in the year as well was organizing and making sure that everybody was in the right spots before you try to, you know, you try to play offense. And I think he's gotten better at that as well, even when he was coming off the bench. I think he's gotten better at organizing it and taking time and valuing every possession. Whereas before, he may have come off and, you know, sometimes his mindset is, I need to get a bucket, because that's who I was in the past. It's not who you're going to be. You know, you can do that, but you also got to try to do other things to affect the game in a positive manner. And my thing with that, to your argument, well, my devil's advocate to your argument is that if that's how they're going to play going forward, like I said, even with Wendell, they try to play through Wendell and Thad out of the pocket. Like, you don't necessarily need a person that's like a savant with the ball, like, that's going to be, all right, you're going to come off the ball screen and then we need you just to dice people up, or, you know, how LeBron gets the ball in the mid post and then he just like direct the traffic and stuff like that. But that way they play offense can work. As long as people are unselfish, do you think Drew Holiday is a savant with the ball?
No, and I think that's a good example, because like the Bucks don't really have any, you know, high level playmaker. Let's say like Drew is a good playmaker, Chris Middleton is a good playmaker, Giannis has sort of developed that side of his game as well. But like that's a good counter. Like, that is a team that doesn't necessarily have that A level creator, let's say, but. I mean, they've got enough of that across the court where maybe that sort of balances out, and they've got it at a number of positions and they've got it at a number of levels of the court, whereas it kind of feels like the Bulls at the moment, a lot of their playmaking sort of comes through that high post where, you know, in a game that matters in the playoffs, let's say, who knows if they get into the play-in or the playoffs this season. But like, it just, to me at least, it does feel like it's a little top heavy, like they need a little bit more guard play. And I guess that's like I said, I'm a bit of a critic of Kobe at times, but at the same time, like if I'm being rational, like where I think the Bulls have done Kobe hard done by, and even Zach to an extent, is like they haven't necessarily surrounded those guys with enough playmaking to help those guys. And as we saw in this Heat game, like when the Heat was sending that huge hard trap to Kobe and they were just doubling the ball at Kobe, like who is Kobe going to give the ball to necessarily create the play? Like, it's hard to get the ball to Vooch at that point to make that play. So, like, you kind of need that secondary or third creator type thing on the perimeter, preferably, at least in my point of view. But I take what you're saying, but I still do think they need that, and I'm hoping Kobe can develop into that.
Yeah, for sure. I think he kind of hit it on the head in his post-game interview the other night where we obviously, like, it's not even just our generation anymore. I think it's just the world. And like you said, the fan, like for y'all as a fan base, wanting to get back to the 90s and the early 2000s where you had Michael Jordan and the D Rose teams. So I understand the frustration there. And I think like, even like my brother hates losing. Like, so it's not like he just like out there just, you know what I'm saying? Like he hates losing. Every time they lose, he takes losing hard, just like y'all do as fans. So I think that, like, I just go back to, like, where we talk about developing and how far he's came from last year. You couldn't have told me that if he played a game, he would have got 10 assists last year. I don't think no fan would have said he's capable of getting 10 assists in a game or impacting the game and having 16 points and 10, you know, double assists and double-digit points.
Yeah, for sure. And like, and even in the, over the last five or six games, like his playmaking has been better than I expected, to be honest with you. Like his turnovers have been down, like they're up tonight, let's say. You know, you're going to have a bad game every now and then, but even over the last five to six games, his playmaking has been better than what I thought. But I certainly take your point that I wouldn't have expected him to have games where he had 10, 11 assists or whatever it might have been, because, you know, his role was super different last year. I didn't necessarily think he had that in him. But I guess that lends to a next question that I wanted to ask, like things like feel, things like basketball IQ and learning to become a lead creator, let's say, like the Bulls are trying to sort of, were trying to make Kobe be, let's say. Do you think you can, from a coaching standpoint, let's say, and of a spectrum of guys, like one end you got like, say, Lou Williams, on the other end you got someone like Chris Paul, like if you place a player somewhere on that spectrum, like, how far can we, as fans, from a coaching standpoint, let's say, can we expect players to develop things like feel and IQ and touch and those sorts of things? Or is that just something that's sort of inherent in a player where you either have it and you don't? Maybe you can improve it by 5 to 10%, but I don't know what the right answer is. It's kind of dependent on the person. But like, how do you view that more generally? And how does that sort of come back to Kobe? And do you think he can sort of really improve in those areas?
I think first it has to be like a want to, right?
Yeah.
You have to want to get it to, like, because some people, you know, they just want to score the ball. I think with my brother, people fail to realize, like, if you go back and look at all the teams he was on, he's been the guy that, like, had to score the ball for the teams to win. It wasn't like, all right, I don't want to pass the ball. But, like, going back to high school, like, his sophomore year, he got help his junior, but it's a sophomore year. I know this is kind of out of context, but it was nobody else for him to pass the, not no disrespect to the guys on his team, but if he wasn't going to get 40, they wasn't going to have a chance to win. And it, like, I think it goes back to you having a want to. And I think it's not that guys don't have feel, or like if you don't have feel, or, you know, for the game or IQ for the game, I don't think you can play in the NBA, in today's NBA anyway, because every player is so smart. Because think about it. You were in training camp for how long? You're not even training camp for that long before you start playing your first game. And guys that have to pick up on defensive coverages and offensive plays, or you don't play. And so, like, we go to answer your question, I think he could be somewhere in the middle, maybe leaning to more like in the, maybe let's say if he's 60-55 score, like, playmaker. Like, nobody's net, like Chris Paul's number five in the history of the NBA in assists. And it's also up to the staff. Like, I think certain guys like Lou Will or Jordan Clarkson got labeled that, right? They went to a team and they said, look, all we want you to do is score. So also, like, I commend the Bulls for trying to not put him in a box.
Yeah, that's an interesting take, because, like, I certainly understand that point of view, but, like, I kind of am disappointed in the way the Bulls have sort of handled the situation with Kobe, where they've kind of sort of made it a sink or swim type proposition with him. Like, it kind of felt like clearly they didn't upgrade the point guard position, or they didn't add to the point guard position, let's say. Like, one of the big things that I wanted to see them do in the offseason was to trade for Chris Paul, because Kobe had a connection with Chris Paul. You just brought in Billy Donovan, who coached Chris Paul, who ran a lot of three-guard lineups where you could have played Chris Paul and Kobe and Zach together, and that could have helped Kobe sort of learn that role slowly, where it kind of feels like the Bulls have done the complete opposite thing, where they didn't bring in any point guard help at all, and they sort of just threw Kobe out there to sink or swim, so to speak. So, you know, even me as a critic of Kobe at times, like, if I'm being rational and thinking about it more holistically and just focusing in on Kobe, like, to me, that's kind of unfair even. So it's interesting to see that you take that sort of perspective on it, that you know, the more positive slant on it, let's say, where it's good that they've maybe given him that opportunity. But from my point of view, like, I kind of feel like they've sort of done hard by him, because, like, if for whatever reason he is struggling, then it sort of compounds and affects the team. And I don't think it's fair, let's say, for Kobe, the way they've sort of gone about it. I'm more conservative about, like, how I'd like to see guys develop and be brought along, but they've kind of just gone completely the opposite way, I guess, and just thrown him out there. How do you feel about that more generally, about the fact that, you know, he hasn't necessarily had that opportunity, as you sort of mentioned before? He had to go out and be a scorer at those previous levels throughout his career. This is kind of his first real go at being a lead creator, let's say. Do you think it was fair or too rushed to throw Kobe into that type of role?
I don't know. Honestly, I feel indifferent about it, if that makes sense. I don't know if that makes sense. Yeah. I feel indifferent. Like, I would rather them do that. If I had to choose an answer, I'd rather him do that than just to say, nah, we're just gonna make you a scorer. And it goes back to me saying, we're gonna put you in a box. Like, I think our family and Kobe are like, all right, you're gonna put me out there and I'm gonna figure it out. I'm gonna figure out how to navigate. You're gonna throw me in the water without a raft. I'm gonna figure out how to not sink. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think that, like, I think that's my point of view on it. Like, I would rather them do that. And then, like, you, all right, now you see what you need to work on, instead of saying, we just need you to, you know, like, be a scorer. And I appreciate Billy in the front office, because, you know, they want these guys to win and develop at the same time. And I feel like Billy has been very upfront about what he's needed. And you know, you give praise when praise is earned, and you give criticism when criticism is earned. And I think that he's kind of trying to help my brother a lot. see, like, all right, it's just not about you. Like, it's not even just about you getting assistance, about just getting a group organized, more so than playmaking. If you get the group organized, everything else will kind of take care of itself. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know how to answer that question. I kind of danced around it.
No, that's look, you did answer it, because, I mean, you've taken a different viewpoint, which is the entire point of why it made sense to get you on here and to discuss these things in person rather than over Twitter, which isn't necessarily the best platform to have those sorts of conversations. But, like, you've given me a viewpoint or a vantage point, particularly from someone who's close to Kobe, that maybe I wouldn't have considered before or thought much of myself. Whereas I'm just going to that immediate critical point of view, where I'm like, why are the Bulls doing this? Like, you're kind of setting him up to fail type thing. Like, that's how I feel about it. Like, that's how I feel about it watching this Heat game, where he was getting trapped on an island there. And I'm like, how is he meant to do anything on this? Like, what are you expecting him to do? Like, he's the lone creator out there. What are you guys doing to help him out type thing? So I don't know. Like, it's an interesting perspective. It's good to get that different side of things, I guess. But look, I've kept you long enough, mate. But look, the last question that I wanted to ask you was around, like, again, the different way we view things. Like, from my point of view, like, I don't see Kobe as someone that gets to the line much or you know, finishes strongly at the rim. But is that me just being too reactionary, focusing too immediately on, you know, what he's capable of right now, what he's not capable of? Or is that something that can happen over time as he sort of physically matures? And, you know, same thing like in terms of navigating screens and beating through or working over screens. Like, is that something that can come over time as his body matures? Because, like, he's still 21. He is very still, you know, slight and small in frame and those sorts of things. And like you mentioned before, like, once he gets off seasons to sort of work on his game, but maybe even work on his body, like, do you think some of those other criticisms that I have of his game, like, you know, getting to the rim, finishing at the rim, getting to the free throw line, you know, navigating screens, those sorts of things, do you think that stuff will sort of dissipate as he sort of just grows into his body even?
Yeah, I think you saw some of that stuff in this little 5-game stretch. Because specifically the Memphis game, I think he had 7 free throws that game. This game he had 6 free. So he was 6 for 6 from the line, 7 for 7 from the line, and then he was 7 for 7 from the Boston line. And 4 of those came, when they were fouling. And then tonight you saw him. I mean, you seen him showing more athleticism this year than last year, in my opinion. As far as like being able to, you know, dunk the ball. Tonight, it was a play where it was Trevor Ariza or Andre Iguodala and Kendrick Nunn, and he drove right, and he finished through that. So I think it was a play where he was guarding – somebody was guarding him, a bigger defender, and he got an and-one against Memphis. So I think you're seeing glimpses of that. Now it's just – you know, being consistent.
Even that big dunk he had. Like, he had a huge dunk against Bam today where he had that hesitation dribble. And, like, again, that's not something we haven't necessarily seen much of Kobe like that. He's typically just, you know, in one gear, let's say. It's either, you know, operating at a slower pace or operating at, like, a crazy high pace. But, like, against Bam in that position in that fourth quarter, he had a really nice hezzy dribble and he sort of, like, went between modes of going really quickly, slowing it down and then exploding again and had that huge dunk. Like, they're not things that we haven't seen from Kobe before, but maybe, you know, as he goes on, those things will develop. But I don't know.
Yeah, I think that, like, when you see stuff like that, all right, now it shows you from a coaching perspective, it shows you that, you are capable of doing it. Now we just got to get you to do it consistently and you got to be aware of those things. And I think that Billy made a comment the other day that the game has slowed down for him. I think you can really tell that it has slowed down for him, and he's understanding the game a little bit more. And then just on the defensive side of defeating screens, it's just obviously him focusing on that more and having more anticipation, just being locked in all the time on that part of the ball. And then just like I feel like. Defeating screens is a skill in the NBA.
Yeah, for sure.
I did when I was at University of North Carolina Greensboro, I did a defensive edit for our team of Marcus Smart and Terry Rozier because when they were in Boston, they were really, really good at defeating screens. I think that's something that could be, you could even drill that, right? And practice when they do practice, because they don't really get to practice, or in off season. Like, I think that's stuff that you can get better at. And I think he will get better at that. And
fair point.
And I didn't mean to cut you off, but he showed he can do it a couple times. So, like, it wasn't just like he just hits the screen every time. It's just about being consistently doing those type of things on a more of a consistent basis.
He was doing it well against Colin Sexton the other night. Like, he was battling over those screens pretty well the other night. Like, it's just about consistency at this point. Like, can he do it routinely every game type thing? So yeah, again, I take your point. We'll see how it all sort of transpires. It obviously hasn't been an easy season for these players, and in particular younger players, given the fact that these teams are barely practicing. There hasn't really been an off season to sort of work as a team under the coaches of this team. Obviously a new coaching regime has sort of come through as well. So you're definitely right. Like, someone like me loses that perspective at times, but yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how Kobe develops, and, you know, if that happens in Chicago or whatever his career will be. Like, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Like I sort of said, that it kind of feels to me, at least, like there's a battle of ideals. Sort of, do we keep developing these young guys, or do we win now? Can we do both? Like, that's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. But as I've sort of told you, like, in private, at least, like, if I want Kobe to be good, because if Kobe's good, then that's a good thing for the Chicago Bulls. And I'm more than happy to be wrong about my critiques about Kobe if he comes out and proves me wrong and, you know, makes the Bulls good. Like, that's ultimately what I want to see as a fan. Like, I want to see a good Bulls team, as I sort of mentioned from the top. Like, we've had a lot of lean, bad years here. So if Kobe can be part of that and can sort of help, I guess, make this team better, and in turn he gets better, then, you know, ultimately, like, a critic like me will be happy to see that happen, sort of thing. So even though I'm critical maybe at times now, I most certainly hope that he can sort of work it out and he can develop into the player that, you know, you think he can be, and I, you know, the player that I think he can be. I think he can be a serviceable and good player in this NBA, in this league. But, you know, if he can exceed my expectations, that then it's only good for me as well. But look, Will, I appreciate you coming on, mate, and spending some time helping me talk about Kobe. Like I said, like, this season for Chicago has been, it's been difficult as a fan, let's say. I'm sure it's been difficult for someone like Kobe as well. But I'm hoping, you know, over the next sort of 10 to 12 games as we sort of close out the season, that we can see Kobe building on what he's been doing the last 5 or 6 games. So I appreciate you coming on and sharing some insight about Kobe, his game, who he is as a person, all that sort of stuff. I really appreciate it, mate. But before I let you get away, if you want to tell people where they can follow you online, where they can sort of catch up with, you know, anything that you're putting out there or anything like with that Kobe's doing, like, you know, obviously feel free to put those plugs in now if you like.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at WRW_11. My brother also has links on his Instagram where you can donate money for women's rights and technology specifically. And he also did things, some stuff with cancer. Yeah, you can find that link under the picture with the breast cancer hoodie that he wore a couple of games ago. And if you guys would like to donate money to their foundation as well.
Yeah, for sure, man. I'm glad we could end on that note, to be honest with you. Like, that is more than worthy causes to, obviously, to have people to donate to. And the fact that Kobe's sort of repping that is cool as well. So Bulls HQ listeners, go do that. Will, mate, I appreciate you for coming on. And it was good to have this conversation in person rather than via DMs and Twitter for a change. It was nice to have an actual conversation.
Yeah, thank you for having me again, Mark.
No, I appreciate it, mate. Thank you for coming on. Bulls fans, hopefully you enjoyed this episode with Will. Whilst you're out there following Kobe, doing all that stuff, following Will, if you want to hit me up on Twitter as well, at MK Hoops. If you want to follow the podcast on Twitter too, at Bulls HQ Pod. If you want to be part of the Bulls HQ Discord, shoot me a DM on Twitter and I will drop you an invite. But that just about does it for this episode of the podcast. Again, thank you for Will to coming on. Like, this was really fun chat for me to get someone to give me a different view of Kobe, let's say. And it was fun for me. So hopefully for you as a listener, you enjoyed this episode of the show. As I mentioned from the top, I'm back now. My throat is feeling a little better than what it was, but hopefully settling into a more routine podcasting schedule, at least until my son arrives. But we'll see how all that plays out. For now, though, at least, thank you for tuning in. Appreciate your support. And Bulls HQ will be back later in the week. Speak then, Bulls fans.
Amira Rose Davis, historian and co-host of the sports podcast Burn It All Down. And now I'm hosting the new season of American Prodigy, all about Black girls in gymnastics. For the last 40 years, Black gymnasts have moved from the margins to the core of the sport and changed gymnastics along the way. Now they tell their stories. You'll meet trailblazers like Diane Durham, superstars like Jordan Chiles, and everyone in between. Listen to American Prodigies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.